markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures are lower this morning. We check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg with S&P, Dow, and NASDAQ futures all down more than 0.3%. S&P futures down about 13 points. Dow futures down 100. And NASDAQ futures down 33. The DAX in Germany is down 0.75%. 10-year Treasury down 8/32nds. Yield 3.84%. The yield on the 2-year, 4.38%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.25% or 19 cents at $78.21 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.2% or $3.50 at $18.22.70 an ounce. The euro 1.0670 against the dollar. British pound 1.2045. The yen 131.85. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. John.
All right, Karen, thanks. It is now 5:56 on Wall Street. Time for our Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. Today we're looking at the legalization of recreational marijuana. New York has opened its first legal retail weed shop in Manhattan, and Bloomberg's Caroline Hines spoke with Ken Shea, cannabis analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence, about what this means for the New York area and the country overall.
It is really a big deal. I mean, New York is a huge market. It's a highly visible market, and I think a lot of other populous areas in the United States that haven't legalized are going to be watching this closely to see how it pulls it off, how it does. New York's a large market, and it has high hopes, and no pun intended. It looks to its neighbor, New Jersey. New Jersey, you know, legalized recreational only back in April. It's already up to a $1 billion run rate Wow. in sales. New York's got twice the population. So you put the math together, and you have a really big industry out of the gate. The demand is going to be there. The product's been around a long time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, all eyes are on New York. It's one of the most visible market to really get a sense of what's going on.
You do some great analysis for us, and we always love it, that sort of bringing together some of the issues that perhaps still the spending bill didn't have the marijuana banking element to it, and we saw a lot of pot stocks fall on the back of that, that many still say to really grow this industry, they need to be able to get bank loans, they need to be able to get a more easier access to capital. But I'm interested in your perspective of why we've already seen the ability when I walk outside of Bloomberg to cross the street, and I can go and get edibles, I can go and buy certain marijuana-related food and consumption. What is that store doing now, and why has it been able to do that ahead of this sort of legalization?
Well, New York is taking a different approach, put it that way, than many markets, you know, and allowing, you know, the social justice theme to allow some flexibility, let me put it that way, to some operators that won't exist in many other markets. And that's going to at the consternation of the legal operators. You know, legal operators say, look, we're paying all these taxes. We're going, jumping through all these hoops. We're doing a lot of things here. Help us out by enforcing the laws on the books that, you know, you can't have someone down the street selling it legally and avoiding taxes if you're going, if the regulated entities are going to compete well. So that's really going to be a key issue going forward. And it also may, you know, also discourage some other big entities from getting into the New York market until they enforce those rules.
And that's Bloomberg intelligence analyst Ken Shea speaking with Carolyn Hyde. Catch Carolyn and Paul Sweeney for a special simulcast of Bloomberg Markets Day. It starts at 10 a.m. Wall Street time right here on Bloomberg Radio. Attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and the Bloomberg Terminal at BLawGo. Karen.
Well, John, here's another legal story we're watching. Canada's merger court ruled in favor of Rogers Communications and Shaw Communications in a key antitrust case. That clears one of the final hurdles to the union of two of the nation's largest telecommunications firms. The federal antitrust commissioner failed to prove that the deal would cause significant harm to competition in the industry. We are watching futures this morning. They're lower with S&P futures down 12 points or 0.3%. Dow and NASDAQ futures both down about 0.3% as well, with Dow futures down 94 points and NASDAQ futures down 30. And the 10-year Treasury down 9/32nds, yield 3.85%, and the yield on the 2-year, 4.39%. Straight ahead, we have a check on the business headlines and all the news you need to start your day again on a day when futures are lower. This as hour two of Bloomberg Daybreak begins right now.
markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks declining along with U.S. stock index futures on the final trading day of the year. And we check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg with S&P futures down 11 points, Dow futures down 80, and NASDAQ futures down 32. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.6%. 10-year Treasury down 10/32, yield 3.85%. The yield on the 2-year, 4.39%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.1% or 10 cents at $78.30 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.25% or $4.20 at $18.21.80 an ounce. The euro, 1.0670 against the dollar. British pound, 1.2045. The yen is at 131.94. And Bitcoin this morning, down 0.5% at about $16,500. The S&P 500 down more than 19% this year. The NASDAQ has lost about a third of its value. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, a House committee is set to release 6 years of Donald Trump's tax returns today, pulling back the curtain on financial records that the former president fought for years to keep secret. Southwest Airlines says it expects to return to a normal flight schedule today. The declaration comes after nearly a week of cancellations and delays for travelers. Thursday night football, the Cowboys beat the Titans 27-13. In the NBA, the Knicks lost, the Celtics won. In the NHL, the Rangers lost in a shootout to the Lightning 2-1. The Islanders won. The Capitals lost in overtime to the Senators 4-3. And soccer legend Pele has died after a battle with cancer. He was 82. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It is now 5:42 on Wall Street. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. I'm John Tucker alongside Karen Moscow. Let's take a look at some of the other stories that are making news this morning. TC Energy says it's restarted the ruptured segment of its Keystone oil pipeline. This follows a spill that forced the conduit shut for more than 3 weeks. Let's get the story from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
The company put out a statement saying the Keystone pipeline is now operational to all delivery points. The massive crude pipeline, which can carry more than 600,000 barrels a day, is a major conduit linking oil fields in Canada to refiners in the Gulf Coast. A leak on a section of the pipeline that extends to the Cushing, Oklahoma storage hub spilled 14,000 barrels of oil in Kansas in early December, becoming one of the largest onshore U.S. oil spills since 2010, according to government data. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Well, let's stick with energy. Oil is set to end a volatile year modestly higher as investors expect a rebound in Chinese demand and brace for less Russian crude. Demand for oil in China is in question, and traders are bracing for more reaction from Russia to sanctions on its energy exports. We take a look at oil right now, and NYMEX crude is down about 0.2%, down 12 cents. It's at $78.28 a barrel.
And taking a closer look at China, new data reveals economic activity rebounding in several cities where COVID infections likely already peaked. That's in spite of many parts of the country grappling with soaring cases. The number of passengers using subways in major cities like Beijing, Wuhan, and Chengdu rose sharply in the week through Wednesday. That's a sign residents are returning to work, shopping, and eating at restaurants, a measure of traffic congestion that also increased significantly over the same period.
Well, John, meantime, China could see as many as 25,000 deaths a day from COVID-19 next month. That's according to Airfinity, which expects deaths to peak around January 23rd. It says daily infections will likely peak 10 days before that at around 3.7 million cases.
Yeah, right now, let's turn to the crypto space. Talk digital tokens in the wake of the FTX collapse. Well, the past year has seen crypto prices drown in the sludge of an extended crypto winter. The FTX debacle, that has put the future of the space maybe in question. So what's next? We are joined by our next guest, Everett Millman, the chief market analyst at Gainesville Coins. How's that for an introduction, Everett? After the fraud and bankruptcies, is there a light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, 2022 will almost certainly go down as the worst year on record for crypto. And I think in the wake of the FTX fallout, we have seen that major institutions are beginning to dip their toe back into the crypto space. Fidelity has opened crypto trading. Goldman Sachs has been buying up some of those distressed cryptocurrency companies. And both HSBC and JP Morgan have trademarked their own crypto wallets or crypto exchanges. So we are seeing institutions at least come back into the fold as the sell-off has continued. And also governments, both Russia and Japan, are exploring removing their bans on crypto. And the Bank for International Settlements is finalizing a regulation that banks can now hold 2% of their reserves in Bitcoin. So I don't think, even with all of the fear and uncertainty and doubt, that cryptocurrency is going to be completely wiped off the face of the earth anytime soon.
Can you separate the space between the actual tokens and the coins and the platforms?
Oh, that's a fascinating question, because as of now, we've still seen that the major use cases for a lot of these tokens is simply for speculative trading vehicles, you know, trading back and forth. But the on-chain data for Bitcoin in particular shows that the majority of wallets have been holding lately. It's been at least 6 months since any Bitcoin has moved in or out of those wallets. So that does somewhat lend credence to the idea that perhaps Bitcoin could operate as a store of value if this lack of volatility that we've seen with the Bitcoin price continues. But there's still a major problem, obviously a major political issue with how to regulate these exchanges and kind of unlock the value of this new technology and innovation in a way that does not promote kind of these black box operations like we're happening at FTX and perhaps at Binance.
Well, you mentioned Bitcoin, and I would argue that there's a degree of stability with that particular token relative to the others. Why is that so relatively stable, and how many of those other coins are total baloney?
Well, there's certainly some baloney out there, to be sure. And Bitcoin does distinguish itself by having some underlying fundamentals, the fact that it does convert electricity and energy into a type of currency, and the fact that there's only going to be 20 million total Bitcoin, so that sort of digital scarcity gives it a bit of a leg up on other less mature crypto projects. But again, I do think that regulation is going to be key here. Bitcoin is a bit of a tricky case because it sort of operates under its own sovereignty. But if governments decide that they'd like to take a harsher approach to regulating Bitcoin and other tokens, it's simply going to push that activity and that innovation into safer jurisdictions. It'll push it into a black market. And so I don't think that exactly solves the problem, but it is obviously something that policymakers are going to continue to look at. It's not simply going away.
All right. Advocates of the space have argued certainly against regulation. That's out the window at this point. What's the regulatory landscape ahead?
Well, there has to be some sort of oversight akin to what already goes on in financial markets. We've seen with the FTX debacle that a lot of what was going on was not particularly crypto-specific fraud. It was just sort of simply plain vanilla fraud, if there is such a thing. So obviously the failure there is because of the lack of regulation, I would argue. And so again, it raises this question. Do we simply want to push all the activity into other countries or into kind of black markets where regulators don't have a clear view of what's going on? Or will the cryptocurrency community accept some level of regulation that will engender more confidence, because it's clear that trust and confidence in this space has been decimated. And even with some of the major institutions coming back in, it's going to take months and perhaps years to build back that trust. And I think allowing regulation or embracing regulation would be probably the biggest step toward doing that.
And Everett, thanks a lot for joining us this morning. Everett Millman, the chief market analyst at Gainesville Coins. As you look at the price of Bitcoin this morning, down about 0.6%, it's at 16,488. And Dow futures right now down 73. S&P E-mini futures, they're down 10. The NASDAQ futures down 26.
markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks declining along with U.S. stock index futures on the final trading day of the year, which again would close out the worst year in more than a decade for global equities and bonds. And we check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 15 points or 0.4%. Dow futures down 0.3% or 105 points. And NASDAQ futures down 0.4% or 43 points. The DAX in Germany is down 0.6%. 10-year Treasury down 9/32, yield 3.84%. The yield on the two-year, 4.39%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.3% or 22 cents at $78.18 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.25% or $4.40 at $18.21.60 an ounce. The euro, 1.0665 against the dollar. British pound, 1.2041. The yen, 132.03. And Bitcoin's down 0.5% at $16,500. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. A House committee will release 6 years of Donald Trump's tax returns today. The Ways and Means Committee voted last week to release the returns with some redactions of sensitive information. Southwest Airlines says it expects to return to a normal flight schedule today. The declaration comes after nearly a week of cancellations and delays for travelers. In Thursday Night Football, the Cowboys beat the Titans 27-13. In the NBA, the Knicks lost, the Celtics won. In the NHL, the Rangers lost in a shootout to the Lightning 2-1. The Islanders won. The Capitals lost in overtime to the Senators 4-3. And soccer legend Pele has died after a battle with cancer. He was 82. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, 5:23 on Wall Street. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's turn to politics now, where Democrats turn over control of the House to Republicans in the new year. That raises a number of questions about Ukraine funding and who will be majority leader of the House. U.S. Representative Brendan Boyle, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, is addressing those questions and the controversy surrounding Representative-elect George Santos. He spoke with Bloomberg's Madison Mills.
I do want to talk about Ukraine funding. I wonder, is there potentially a danger of us draining funding and investment for something like Ukraine? Are you concerned about that? Or do you think that potentially Zelensky's visit, you know, mitigated any concerns from Republicans about diving deep into that funding?
Well, as President Zelensky said in his speech, and I was present for it in the House chamber, this is not charity. This is in American interest that we are aiding Ukraine in this fight. The United States has proudly led the free world ever since the end of World War II in standing up to first Soviet and now Russian aggression. I'm very proud of the fact that so far support for helping Ukraine has been bipartisan, especially in the Senate. Obviously, on the House side, you do have a vocal minority of House Republicans that have been against supporting aid to Ukraine.
Right.
My concern is, as we get into next year, that if Kevin McCarthy somehow holds on by his fingernails being Speaker, he will be so beholden to the ultra-MAGA extremists like Marjorie Taylor Greene that, in fact, he may be looking at a way out in terms of supporting Ukraine.
Are you planning to object to seating George Santos on January 3rd?
I think the real question here is, what will Republican conference leader Kevin McCarthy do? He has been totally silent. Typically when, although there has not really been a situation as dramatic as Santos, but in other instances in which you've had members of the House, say, misbehaving, it's typically disciplined on your own side. You have seen a few congressional Republicans speak out, stating the obvious that this is beyond the pale. It demands an investigation. Kevin McCarthy has been totally silent. Is he so desperate and craven to become Speaker that he will just silently accept Santos's vote and really not say anything about this complete fraud?
If you had to grade Kevin McCarthy's response to this so far, what letter grade would you give him?
Well, it's either an incomplete or an F. It's been completely nothing. He hasn't said one word. It's quite embarrassing, actually. And, you know, when you look at the Republican majority, it's very thin. It's the exact same slim majority that we Democrats have for the last 2 years. As you look into, as you look ahead 2 years and you consider so many Republicans will be running, especially as first term members in challenging districts, I can't imagine they feel great about the fact that they have a Republican leader who can't even do the right thing and stand up and speak out against Santos.
I got to wonder on Santos, too, whether and what his committee assignments might look like. What do you think about that?
I think Mr. Santos probably should worry a little bit more about the criminal investigations that are happening now in New York into him, as well as potential further investigations. I'm very curious to find out how exactly his campaign was funded. He has a lot of questions to answer.
And that was Democratic Congressman Brendan Boyle speaking with Madison Mills on Bloomberg South. On catch the program weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio. And hear the full interview on the Daily.
High pressure offshore should result in some sunshine developing across the tri-state area today, and that'll lead to temperatures climbing up to about 50 to 55 this afternoon as we go well above normal. Increasingly cloudy tonight, 40 to 45. Cloudy tomorrow with rain late in the day, 50 to 55. Unfortunately, rain's in the forecast for New Year's Eve, lows 45 to 50. Clearing, though, on New Year's Day. I'm Rob Carolyn with your three-day forecast on Bloomberg 1130.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And good morning. We are coming up to 5:30 on Wall Street. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm John Tucker. We're brought to you by your daily reminder from Innovation Refunds to apply for a payroll tax refund if your small or medium-sized business was impacted by COVID-19. Innovation Refunds clients already claimed over $2 billion in payroll tax refunds. Get started at GetRefunds.com.
And we are just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are lower this morning as we enter the final trading day of the year. 2022 marked the worst year in more than a decade for global equities and bonds. Fed tightening and hot inflation weighed on sentiment. David Bahnsen, chief investment officer at the Bahnsen Group, says to look for some gains in the new year, even if there is a recession.
You can have a recession, you can have a bear market, and still have some things in the market do well when other things are not. That's really what I expect going into 23.
And David Bahnsen with the Bahnsen Group sees prices coming down next year, but still thinks caution is warranted.
And to the latest now, the war in Ukraine. Russia launched one of its heaviest barrages on major cities in Kyiv, aiming to destroy civilian targets. At the same time, President Biden signed a government funding bill that includes $47 billion in aid for Ukraine. The U.S. is also considering sending Bradley fighting vehicles to the country.
Well, news this morning, John, tied to collapsed crypto exchange FTX. Meetings between White House officials and former CEO Sam Bankman-Fried are coming under scrutiny. Bloomberg's Steve Rappaport joins us live with that story. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Karen and John. Bankman-Fried was banking on making connections with the Biden administration to promote his company and the crypto industry. Previously disclosed visitor logs show SBF had three meetings with top White House officials. A source confirms to Bloomberg there was a fourth meeting with one of President Biden's senior advisors. Those connections ultimately fell apart after the collapse of FTX and Bankman-Fried's subsequent arrest in the Bahamas. We're also learning that the Bahamian government quickly took action when FTX went under, having seized $3.5 billion in digital assets by the next day. Live in New York, I'm Steve Rappaport, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Steve, thanks. On Capitol Hill today, House committee set to release 6 years of Donald Trump's tax returns. In response, Republicans, who soon take control of the House, threatening to release tax returns of Democrats. But U.S. Representative Brendan Boyle says that might not have the intended effect.
There has been sort of a threat from the other side that this would create a new precedent. That's just not so for two reasons. Every president since Nixon has voluntarily released their tax returns every single year. If Republicans are threatening to, say, release Joe Biden's tax returns, well, great. They're already public.
Well, Democratic Congressman Brendan Boyle spoke with Madison Mills on Bloomberg's Sal Dodd. Catch that program weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio. Ahead of the cash open on Wall Street today, S&P E-mini futures, they are down 12 points. This is Bloomberg. And that brings us to 5:31 on Wall Street. Let's get a look at news from around the world and in New York. And for that, good morning, Michael Barr.
Good morning, John. The anger toward Congressman-elect George Santos is growing. Dozens of his constituents in New York held a demonstration in the congressional district yesterday.
We were bamboozled, absolutely lied to, and we do not want this representation in New York District 3.
They called on the New York Republican to resign. Santos has been under fire for lying about his education, work experience, and even his faith and family. The city of Buffalo is trying to get back on its feet from a destructive storm. Snow reached as high as 4 feet in the city, contributing to dozens of deaths. Now, with the weather warming up, there are concerns of flooding from melting snow. President Joe Biden has signed a $1.7 trillion bill funding government operations through September of 2023, the end of the federal budget year. New York's first legal weed dispensary is now open for business. Long lines formed outside the Housing Works new dispensary in Greenwich Village yesterday afternoon. The first sales of legal cannabis took place at 4:20 p.m. This man was among the customers standing in line for hours.
This is the social equity we look for and hope for, but, you know, we all still need other components, so we hope not to still be squeezed out in other manners, i.e. some people don't have the capital, some people don't have the properties.
They did the confetti test ahead of the New Year's Eve ball drop tomorrow night in Times Square. New Year's Eve ball drop co-producer Jeffrey Strauss.
This is going to be the best time ever. We're going to start together. Ready? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year!
Yeah! 3,000 pounds of colorful paper will rain down on the city street Saturday night. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. I thank you. That brings us to 5:34 of Wall Street. And let's get the Bloomberg Sports Report being brought to you by your Tri-State Audi dealers. Good morning, Dan Schwartzman.
Good morning, John. The Knicks losing on the road in San Antonio.
The Spurs get it back. Any time. Just got to get it up before the shot clock runs out. They do. It's good! Oh, Bob! Josh Richardson!
That's courtesy of the Spurs Radio Network. The Knicks falling to the Spurs 122-115 despite 41 points and 11 rebounds from Julius Randle and 36 points from Emmanuel Quickley. Keldon Johnson leading the Spurs with 30 points in the win. The Rangers falling to the Lightning in Tampa Bay 2-1 in a shootout despite 39 saves from Igor Shesterkin as New York has now lost two games in a row. Meanwhile, the Islanders slipping past the Columbus Blue Jackets 2-1 as New York gets goals from Barzal and Pageau. The Dallas Cowboys improved to 12-4 with a 27-13 win on the road at the Tennessee Titans on Thursday Night Football as Dak Prescott throws 2 second-half touchdowns, both to tight end Dalton Schultz. Meanwhile, the Jets and Giants in action on Sunday with playoff hopes on the line, as the Jets are on the road to Seattle Seahawks, while the Giants are home for the Indianapolis Colts. Both teams will make the playoffs if they win the remaining two games on their schedules. Big loss in soccer as legend Pelé passes away at the age of 82 from complications due to colon cancer, which he had battled since last year. Pelé won a record 3 World Cups and played his entire career with Brazilian club Santos before playing 3 seasons for the New York Cosmos of the North American Soccer League. I'm Dan Schwartzman with Bloomberg Sports. John.
All right, Dan, thanks a lot. And the sports report on Bloomberg brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today or visit AudiOffers.com for more information. Ahead of the cash open on Wall Street, S&P futures right now 13 points lower. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And that brings us to 5:35 on Wall Street. And it's time now for the Tri-State Business Report. And with that, here's Bloomberg's Gina Cervetti.
New Yorkers will be the first in the nation to legally choose whether to fix their own digital devices or take them to a local repair shop. Governor Kathy Hochul signed the first-of-its-kind Digital Fair Repair Act, which takes effect in July of 2023. An industrial property on Connecticut Avenue in Bridgeport is changing hands. The Fairfield County Business Journal reports that Alpha Real Estate Partners is paying just over $1.8 million to buy the property from 1313 Connecticut Avenue, LLC. In corporate entities that own and operate a Times Square building and an attached Crown Plaza hotel have filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Court papers show that the building at 1605 Broadway has struggled for years under a licensing deal with Intercontinental Hotels Group Resources, and that the pandemic forced the building to close until last month. The controlling entities are ultimately owned by affiliates of Hornado Realty Trust. That's the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Gina Cervetti.
All right, thanks, Gina. It is now 5:37 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. Even before the coronavirus pandemic, more than half of very low-income U.S. households had severe housing problems. Yet due to insufficient funding, just one in five eligible Americans receives federal rental assistance. The rest, some 8 million households, are relegated to conditions that undermine their children's future and the country's productive potential. It would cost a lot to help everyone who needs it, but the money can be found. For starters, stop showering the rich with subsidies in the form of tax breaks that favor wealthy homeowners. That would free up tens of billions of dollars a year, money that could be redirected to housing vouchers for the poor, which have proven effective at averting homelessness and lifting children out of poverty. For far too long, the U.S. government hasn't fulfilled its promise of providing adequate shelter for all. It can, and it should. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion editorials can be heard every weekday at this time. Terminal customers could read more at OPIN Go. Note out of Asia this morning, Bank of Japan announcing an unprecedented third day of unscheduled bond purchases overnight. The BOJ battling speculation it's going to add super accommodative monetary policy. These purchases boosted this month's buying to about $128 billion worth of bonds as a monthly record, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. And as we check currencies right now, the yen at 132.01. That is up 0.8% against the U.S. dollar. This is Bloomberg.
Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, December 30th, 2022. Coming up this hour,
we enter the last trading day of 2022 in a year that stock investors would like to forget.
The U.S. sends billions in aid to Ukraine as Russia ramps up attacks on the country.
Meetings between Sam Bankman-Fried and White House officials draw scrutiny.
And Democrats prepare to release years of former President Trump's tax returns.
Calls are louder for New York Representative-elect George Santos to step down. Plus, Buffalo is trying to get back on its feet after a deadly blizzard. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
And I'm Dan Schwartzman. The Knicks lose on the road at the San Antonio Spurs. I'll have that and more coming up in sports.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Hey, good morning. I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And U.S. stock index futures are lower this morning. And we check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 15 points or 0.4%. Dow futures down 0.3% or 111 points. And NASDAQ futures down 0.4% or 44 points. And the 10-year Treasury down 8/32nds, yield 3.84%. John.
And 2022, Karen, marked the worst year in more than a decade for global stocks and bonds. The NASDAQ in particular has taken a beating, losing a third of its value. This all comes as the Fed tightens policy to bring down the highest inflation seen in decades. David Banson, the chief investment officer at Banson Group, sees prices coming down next year, but still thinks caution is warranted.
The inflation aspect is going to surprise to the downside, and yet the valuations of high growth stocks remain too high historically to put a lot of optimism in indexes or the growth side, the FANG story. Therefore, we remain value investors and cash flow investors.
David Banson with the Banson Group believes there will be more opportunity for some gains in the new year, even if there is a recession.
Well, overseas today, John, European stocks are lower. It's a shortened day in the UK, with the London Stock Exchange closing early. Stocks in Asia, meantime, moved in the other direction, posting modest gains overnight. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has the details from Hong Kong.
Most Asian equity benchmarks edged higher. China vowed more stimulus in 2023 and an improved relationship with the private sector. And economic activity rebounded in several Chinese cities where COVID infections have likely peaked. The dollar was steady while treasury yields picked up a little. The yen rallied as the Bank of Japan unveiled a third day of unscheduled bond purchases. No big end-of-the-year rally here, but no heavy selling either. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thanks. And now the latest on the war in Ukraine. Russia continuing attacks on major cities in Kyiv. Scores of missiles accounted for one of its heaviest barrages of the war, pressing further with a campaign to destroy civilian targets. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says he expects Russia to launch more attacks before New Year's Eve.
Well, back here in the U.S., John, President Biden is sending more money to Ukraine. He signed a $1.7 trillion government funding bill that includes $47 billion in aid for the war-torn country. The U.S. is also considering sending Bradley fighting vehicles to Ukraine as part of a further package of military support.
And now to the latest on collapsed crypto exchange FTX. Meetings between White House officials and the former CEO, Sam Bankman-Fried, are coming under scrutiny. Now, Bloomberg's Steve Rappaport joins us live this morning with that story. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, John and Karen. White House officials confirm Bankman-Fried met with one of President Biden's senior advisors in September. Visitor logs show SBF had at least three other meetings with top officials in a push to build Beltway connections before his crypto firm went belly up. While living in the Bahamas, SBF made frequent trips to Washington, testifying before Congress and meeting regulators. We're also learning the Bahamian government took swift action after FTX collapsed on November 11th. By the next day, regulators say they had seized $3.5 billion of digital assets. Live in New York, I'm Steve Rappaport, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Steve, thank you. On Capitol Hill today, a House committee is set to release 6 years of Donald Trump's tax returns. The Democratic-controlled House Ways and Means Committee voted to release the returns last week. Republicans, who will soon take charge of that committee, are threatening to retaliate by publishing tax records of Democrats and their allies. U.S. Representative Brendan Boyle, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, voted to release the former president's taxes.
The courts, four different times, found in our favor, including the United States Supreme Court. They found that we had a legislative purpose in going after these tax returns. And sure enough, look at what we found. I mean, already the two reports, and they show that, in fact, the IRS was not doing what they were supposed to do. They were not doing the annual audit of the president's taxes.
Democratic Congressman Brendan Boyle spoke with Madison Mills on Bloomberg Sound On. Catch the program weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, the last week has been a nightmare for travelers across the country, especially if you traveled on Southwest. Now the airline says it plans to return to a normal schedule today. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has the latest.
The airline says it does expect, quote, normal operations with minimal disruptions. The carrier has been operating a significantly reduced schedule for several days as it recovers from disruption caused by winter storms and overwhelmed scheduling technology. Southwest says with another holiday weekend full of important connections for our valued customers and employees, we are eager to return to a state of normalcy. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Meantime, in China, COVID infections are expected to continue rising into January as the country pulls back on strict virus policies. Infections and mortalities are projected to peak in January, according to the research firm Airfinity, with China potentially seeing up to 25,000 deaths a day next month. That'll cast a shadow over the start of the first Lunar New Year festivities without pandemic restrictions. But one note may ease concerns. No novel COVID-19 variants have emerged in China, according to a global consortium that's tracking coronavirus mutations. Futures this morning are moving lower. S&P futures down about 16 points this morning. Dow futures down 113. NASDAQ futures are down 43. And straight ahead, we have your latest local headlines plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks to Ann. That brings us to 507 on Wall Street. Let's get a look at the news around the world and New York. For that, we are joined by Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning.
Good morning, John. New York Congressman-elect George Santos is said to be telling local Republican leaders that he will not seek re-election in 2024 as his background comes under even more fire. The chair of the Nassau County Republican Party wrote in a statement, "I don't know what party would endorse him as a candidate, as more possible lies about his schooling and family come to light." In May of 2020, he reported no earned income on his federal returns. In 2022, he loaned his campaign more than $500,000 after reporting being part of a consulting company with a salary of $750,000. Dan Wiener, a former federal election commission attorney who now leads the Elections and Government Center at NYU's Brennan Center, spoke to NBC4.
This is an exceptional case, primarily not because he loaned his campaign lots of money. Many, many candidates do that, but because all the other details of his story about where he got that money have proven to be false.
Santos is set to take office next week and refuses to step aside despite calls for him to resign. Fans in New York are paying tribute to soccer legend Pelé. He died yesterday at age 82 after battling colon cancer. People flocked to the Pelé store in Times Square.
I'm from Brazil. I'm sad. We lost our biggest idol, the greatest man of our history, Pelé. And I'm in New York today. It's so crazy to see in Times Square, the most important place in the world, and you see Pelé name.
He spoke to ABC 7. We'll have more on the death of Pelé in sports shortly. Roads have reopened in storm-besieged Buffalo as authorities continue searching for people who may have died or remain stranded after last week's blizzard. Mayor Byron Brown says significant progress has been made on snow removal, but he's still asking residents not to drive if they don't have to. Buffalo Niagara International Airport is also open again. Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz.
Power has been restored to all Erie County residents. I want to thank the men and women of National Grid and NYSEG.
Erie County's Mark Poloncarz says at least 40 deaths have been reported in western New York from the blizzard. And finally, they did the confetti test in New York's Times Square ahead of the ball drop that will take place Saturday night. They always do the confetti drop, you know? They got to clean up.
Missed that.
Yeah. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. And it's now 5:10 on Wall Street. That's time for the Bloomberg Sports Report, being brought to you by your Tri-State Audi dealers. Good morning, Dan Schwartzman.
Good morning, John. The Cowboys improving to 12-4.
Here comes second down 7. Prescott back, looking left. Throwing it in the back of the end zone for Schultz. What a grab! Did he get it? Touchdown, Dalton Schultz!
That's courtesy of Amazon Prime. The Cowboys with a 27-13 win on the road at the Tennessee Titans on Thursday Night Football as Dak Prescott throws 2 second-half touchdowns, both to tight end Dalton Schultz. Both the Jets and Giants in action on Sunday with playoff hopes on the line as the Jets are on the road at the Seattle Seahawks while the Giants are home for the Indianapolis Colts. Both teams will make the playoffs if they win the remaining two games on their schedules. The Knicks lose on the road at the San Antonio Spurs 122-115 despite 41 points and 11 rebounds from Julius Randle and 36 points from Emmanuel Quickly. The Rangers, meanwhile, falling to the Lightning in Tampa Bay 2-1 in a shootout, despite 39 saves from Igor Shesterkin, as New York has now lost two games in a row. The Islanders, though, slipping past the Columbus Blue Jackets 2-1, as New York gets goals from Barzal and Pageau. Finally, soccer legend Pelé passing away at the age of 82 from complications due to colon cancer, which he had battled since last year. Pelé won a record 3 World Cups and played his entire career with Brazilian club Santos before playing 3 seasons for the New York Cosmos. I'm Dan Schwartzman with Bloomberg Sports. John.
All right, thanks, Dan. And the Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today, or visit AudiOffers.com for more information. And as we look at the futures right now, ahead of the open on the Wall Street, Dow futures right now, 107 points lower. That's down 0.3%. S&P E-mini futures, 15 points lower, down about 0.4%. And after yesterday's strong rally, NASDAQ futures right now indicate a lower open, down 43 points.
Live from coast to coast, from New York to San Francisco, Boston to Washington, D.C., nationwide on Sirius XM, the Bloomberg Business App, and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
Yeah, good morning. I'm John Tucker. It is the final trading day of 2022, closing out the worst year in more than a decade for global equities and bonds. So what's ahead? We're joined now by Ben Ammons, the head of fixed income and macro strategy at New Edge Wealth. Ben, a pleasure. Maybe we got our Santa Claus rally during yesterday's session. Is that something that might be sustainable for risk assets?
Good morning, John. Yeah, you would hope so, right? Because as you say, it's the worst on record. So, you know, the Santa Claus rally is a bit ambiguous, but okay, we still have a few days left. But I'm not sure if you can, you know, extrapolate out for the entire year. And the real reason is, John, is that we do deal with inflation that is still very high, and it's unclear how much it's going to decline. Because as we're now reading the news that China continues to come online, it is a factor next year that will be influencing inflation quite a bit, I think. So we may have still challenges in the first half. Further out is difficult to see, because really in the first half it will be, will the Fed end the tightening cycle as inflation really moderates? And that seems to be uncertain. So I say stay defensive at this moment.
Yeah, on the data front, Ben, you have jobless claims, CPI data. They seem to indicate that policy is working, but is that a false dawn?
And we had one of those false dawns in June, July. It looked like it was working. Claims ticking up, inflation started to decline, only for that to come back. And so it is maybe incremental that we need another quarter or two to see that policy really coming through. And I think of, like, if you think of not just the United States as a country, but different local big states, there's slowdown happening on the ground. So I always think of jobless claims and headline CPIs to be the broadest measures of what the Fed would actually look at. And if it does start to incrementally slow down and you see higher claims every week, you see slower inflation, the Fed is indeed succeeding in that policy. It could change its policy. But at this moment, we may indeed face another false dawn, because broadly, the last number of weeks, the data has been good. So next week's ISM data, for example, will be really important to watch.
Yeah, I like your research, Ben, because you get pretty granular. You're looking at tax receipts at some localities. What does that indicate to you?
Yeah, I picked this up from one of our research providers that showed this to me, that they were looking at different states and how tax receipts were coming in. And normally you don't really pay attention to that, but they show me long-term statistics, and it does show that if you have the big states, you know, by GDP, California, New York, and Illinois, and Florida, and a few others, if you have those and you track those against the United States tax receipts, it does show that they're leading, and it seems that tax receipts are really slowing down. It's like a negative year-on-year growth rate. So there's slowdown going on, John. It's spreading itself through the U.S. Now, it doesn't mean it's immediately recession, but it does indicate that, yeah, activity is being slowed down, I think, likely by the Federal Reserve's policy.
If we use the yield curve as some indicator, the inversion has lessened between the twos and tens right now, negative 55. So I guess we'll call that some steepening there. What does that indicate to you?
Actually, an important one, because, you know, we've been saying for a while now that, yes, yields are going to continue to climb, I think, because the Fed hasn't finished its job yet, but it should lead to an inverted yield curve, potentially, you know, even deeper than we've had recently, right, which was negative 85 base points between the 2-year and the 10-year. We're now something like negative 55 or so, 50. But that recent change, it's what we call bear steepening, as in the 10-year yield rises more than the 2-year. That does say something about expectations in the Treasury market of economic growth at the moment. And yes, GDP now from the Atlanta Fed is again quite high. The CPI now from the Cleveland Fed is moderated, but not as much. So it does think, I think the 10-year yield is maybe going to move towards 4% on just interim better economy at the moment. That's what that's saying, that's steepening.
Real quick, in the 30 seconds we have left, does the Fed have to torpedo the U.S. jobs market to reach its goals?
Yeah, that's unclear, John, because of that we do have a COVID effect on the jobs market. A lot of people are still sidelined. And I think that jobs gap that Powell spoke to, it's not that easy to torpedo for that matter. So it comes more down to what you're seeing coming through the big banks and others that are doing all these layoffs. Is that going to accelerate from here? It's just simply the business declines as a result of Fed policy. And that's, I guess, the torpedo aspect of Fed policy on the job market.
All right, and we'll get a clearer picture maybe next Friday when we get the December payrolls report. Ben, always a pleasure. Ben Emmons, the head of fixed income and macro strategy at New Edge Wealth, with us this morning. Coming up on 518 on Wall Street, still ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, we're going to check the markets, of course, and bring you the latest news in business, economics, and finance. Right now, we have S&P E-mini futures 15 points lower after yesterday's rally. The NASDAQ E-mini futures down 46. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.